Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. Sean, this topsy-turvy season continues. The Anaheim Ducks. Well, I mean, they just lost to Colorado Avalanche, but still, the Anaheim Ducks. How about them, huh?
The Ducks have been great, but the Avalanche are the best team in the league, and I don't even know that it's close. And Nathan MacKinnon, which I've been saying for years, is the best player in the league this season, and I don't know if that's close.
You're right about that. You're right about all of that.
I'm right about everything, dude.
No. But this season, 100% you are correct. Tuesday night, Colorado, Anaheim. Who would have thought that on November 11th, on a Tuesday night in Denver, there would be a measuring stick game that involved the Anaheim Ducks and the Colorado Avalanche? Now, I don't think it was a measuring stick game for the Colorado Avalanche. I think they're the best team in the league right now, and they have one regulation loss, and that shows that they're the best team in the league. MacKinnon is lights out. Their best players have been their best players. You hear that all the time, and they have been. MacKinnon, Makar, Natchez, and they're doing it with Scott Wedgwood, which is remarkable, I think, and great for Scott Wedgwood. But for Anaheim, I think it was a measuring stick game, and they didn't quite measure up. I mean, like less than a minute into the game, Arturi Lehkonen scores, and it's 1-0, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is now the Ducks are saying, you know, they're seeing what's for real here, and they're not quite stacking up. They did come back. They got a goal. Leo Carlson, who's been terrific. But then, you know, you saw Colorado kind of pull away and just, you know, play that much better and make things happen because they are the best team in the league. But the Anaheim Ducks have taken that massive step that you need to take. And it's not – see, to me, Sean, what we're seeing from Anaheim is a two-year step. Last year, and I've brought it up, they had a 21-point, I've brought it up in the past, 21-point improvement, 8-win improvement from 2023-24 to 24-25. They had a 21-point improvement and 8-win improvement. They're now taking that next big step to be what I believe is a legitimate playoff contender. You can look at their defensive metrics and you can say they're concerning. I think they can score, and I think that's the thing that young teams or building teams, because they have young and they have veteran guys, are figuring out along the way, especially with a guy who's a new number one goalie, an unquestioned number one goalie. But they're taking that next big step right now, and I think that they're for real.
I think it depends how you define for real. Are they going to be in the mix when, you know, we get late into the season? I think that's the case. The concern I have with them is, you're right, they can score. They have a ton of high-end offensive players led by Carlson, Troy Terry, who's been there for a while, you know, some other guys that can certainly score a lot. But teams are going to learn to defend as the season goes along, right? That's what the NHL regular season is about for true contenders. They start to tighten up as the season goes along. They figure out their systems, you know, and they start to play better at that end of the ice. And my fear is when the true contenders figure that out, can Anaheim score at a rate in which they can cover up their deficiencies, which is what they're doing right now.
Okay, let's stay right there. Who are the true contenders in the Western Conference? I think Colorado, we 100% agree on. Dallas, probably Winnipeg, right? Vegas, I would say, is, even though they're struggling right now. But then you have a mixture. You've got Utah. You've got Edmonton, who we think figures it out all the time, right? So they have to be considered a true contender, even though they're not playing like one at all right now, especially defensively. But there's a mixture of teams there that the Ducks will be either in that mix or ahead of that mix by what they're doing right now because of their ability to score. And these other teams, Chicago and San Jose, are perfect examples of it. Utah is a perfect example of it. They're also trying to figure out how to defend and how to win, you know, later in the season when the games get tighter. And I look at the Anaheim Ducks and I look at the veteran presence that they have on that team, the veteran presence that they have behind the bench, the winning presence that they have behind the bench as well, and the growth that they're showing, and the fact that their best offensive player in Leo Carlson might also be their best defensive forward, you know, when it comes down to it. That to me says that they are for real. And by for real, I'm looking at a team that's going to make the playoffs, not a team that's going to go win the Stanley Cup. I think make the playoffs.
I definitely think they have a chance to do that. I you know, look, and you're right about Leo Carlson. He's probably the next Anze Kopitar in the Western Conference. He's going to be that guy that's just going to drive the Ducks at both ends of the ice for a long time, and it'll be interesting to see him, you know, in the Olympics with the best players in the world, you know, on every team, and having those kind of matchups on every shift. Sometimes you can get away from those in the NHL, you know, but when you get to third and fourth lines against Canada and the U.S., you're still talking about elite players, you know. And you're right, there is a change in the guard. It's one of the things we talked to our guests this week, Braden Coburn, about, you know, how different the standings are in the first quarter of the season and how different the scoring leaders are in the first quarter of the season. I think there's going to be some return to norm, and I think some of those teams, like you mentioned, that aren't playing very well right now, Vegas, Winnipeg, Dallas, who's got a minus goal differential, they're all going to figure it out and become the teams that we think they are, because that's the talent they have. Tampa, the team that Braden Coburn covers, is another one. They've already started to figure it out in the East, and they're coming back toward the top. So it's certainly going to be interesting, but I think, unlike past seasons, I think Anaheim is a team that can no longer be taken for granted.
What about Edmonton? You talk about all these, let's call them the blue bloods of the league, right? The teams that have been in the playoffs a lot over the past several years. What about Edmonton? Do you think that they are a team that figures it out? And I go to the coaches room that we had on NHL.com this week. Craig Johnson, former assistant coach in the league, he wrote about the Oilers and the lack of net front presence. And he mentions in that story that they lost Corey Perry and they lost Evander Kane, two guys who live and they go to the front of the net, and they haven't had Zach Hyman, right? Hyman's coming back, but there's a lack of that presence around the net that Craig Johnson wrote about, and you then look at it and say it's again reliant on pure skill with the Edmonton Oilers, and the fact is they're not defending very well and they're not getting goaltending. So they've been in the Stanley Cup final the last 2 years. The last 3 years they've gotten off to slow starts in the first quarter of the season and they've found a way. Is this just that happening again, or is there a bigger concern there with the Edmonton Oilers?
I think there's a bigger concern for a number of reasons. One, they're not scoring 5-on-5. Like, this is a team that has elite offensive talent that should be able to score at will, and they're not. You know, and your power play can't carry you for long periods of time. The NHL just doesn't work that way. And they've played a ton of hockey. Right. And I think you're seeing that a little with Florida, injury concerns with Florida as well, you know, with Barkov and Tkachuk out. They're treading water at 500, except for Brad Marchand, who's playing like Superman. I think there's a deeper concern. And I, you know, I wonder how many times you can go to the well of Connor McDavid saying this isn't good enough and then playing superhuman for a couple of games to patch over the warts and let it go from there. I think that they need more. Like, there shouldn't be a reason why in November Connor McDavid has to say to his team, we need to play better.
That I agree with. And by the way, they have, as we talk right now, they have 29 5-on-5 goals. We're talking about Edmonton in 17 games. The New York Rangers have 29 5-on-5 goals in 17 games. They've been shut out 5 times at home. Okay, so there's your. By the way, Dallas has fewer. Dallas has 26 5-on-5 goals in 17 games. They've been loaded up on the power play too. I think there's a bigger concern there too with Edmonton. I really do, and I think the amount of playing time, yes, the amount of games that they've played over the last several years plays a role in that. They're also a little bit banged up too, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is out now as well. They're going to get Zach Hyman back, so that's a good thing. And maybe he provides that jolt that they need at the front of the net, which they've been lacking, especially at 5-on-5 this season. To me, it's like you can only go back. You can't continue to get off to slow starts year after year after year and expect we're just going to rip off 10 in a row and we're going to be fine. It doesn't always work that way. And the Western Conference this year is better, because teams like Anaheim are better and Chicago's better and San Jose's better. You can't Seattle's better. Utah's better. You can't feast off of what were the bottom teams in the Western Conference anymore because they're way better.
Look, they need players to be better too. Like, you know, it's not even just the goal scoring. Like, it's so many other things. Like, you watch sometimes in their own end, guys aren't even sacrificing at this point, right? And part of that's it's a long regular season and you got to pick your spots, but you don't see a lot of buy-in, right? And when they try and defend, Bouchard has been not very good so far this year. I mean, look, nobody's paying him to be a defensive defenseman. Nobody's expecting that, but there is a bare minimum of what you need, and I don't know that that's being reached every day in Edmonton. And the one thing I think is their coach is pretty good. I think Knobloch's a really good coach, and I think there's pieces that they can play with to figure it out, but there's certainly some concerns about their depth.
And by the way, if they're not buying in, what are they living off of? They didn't win, right? they didn't win in the Stanley Cup final the last 2 years, so they can't be living off of much. Listen, before we get to Braden Coburn, I did want to, there was another game that I had my eye on Tuesday night, the Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs. We can talk all we want about the Leafs. We've done that in the past. We did that last week. But let's look at the Boston Bruins, Sean. They've won 7 games in a row after losing a bunch in a row. They've been streaky. We know that. But this team is it's like I wrote last week in the mailbag, and I wrote it for you specifically, that they're in the mushy middle. And I kind of still think that they are because – I don't know what to make of the Bruins. Like, what's their identity here? But they continue to find ways, and they're scoring some goals. And Pasternak's now got 401. Their power play has been spectacular. Pasta's all over the place on the power play. He's at the right point. He's down at below the left post and below the goal line. He's up at the left point. He's all over the place. And here are the Boston Bruins, 7 wins in a row at a time, ripping off this streak, at a time where we thought we were putting them to bed early and, around Halloween.
And the thing that struck me in watching that game is how much fun Pasta's having.
Yeah.
That's why he's playing so well. He's having fun. And look, they feed off of each other. Again, Braden Coburn's going to talk a little bit about confidence in regards to Braden Point and some other players. But, clearly he's confident right now. Clearly he believes in his team. They're getting contributions up and down the lineup. Swayman's been fantastic. He keeps them in games for them to figure out what they need to do. But they're going to go as far as Poster carries them. And let me just take a minute to talk a little bit about Geeky as well. He's been fantastic. He didn't score last night. He had 4 or 5 grade A chances. There's 2 players in the league since the new year. So we're almost at a year now, since January 1st of last year. There's 2 players in the league that have scored more goals than Morgan Geeky. That's pretty good.
Yeah. He's come a long way. A very, very long way, no question about it. I agree with you with David Pasternak. He just looked like there was pure enjoyment as he's – I'm watching that game against the Maple Leafs Tuesday night, and it just looked like pure enjoyment from Pasternak's end, and no enjoyment, by the way, from the Maple Leafs in that game.
Well,
none.
I think part of it was they knew they had him, right? That game became a 1-goal game, in the third period. The Maple Leafs score 2, and they get back in it. I don't know what Craig Berube said after the second intermission, but they came out with some malice in the third period. But I don't know that the Bruins ever wavered, right? And they kind of knew that they had him on tilt because the Maple Leafs were running around. They wanted Zadorov so bad because he hit Austin Matthews, and Austin Matthews got hurt. And, he was playing physical all night. And, in the third period, the Maple Leafs decided to kind of, get a pound of flesh. And then they got back into the game, and they kind of put that on hold. But it seemed like the Bruins knew that they had him, and they knew that they had rattled the Maple Leafs again, which is Boston's specialty over the last 10 years.
Yeah, and you don't want to dive too deep into one game, but I thought it was really an indication of where both of these teams are at right now. Boston looks like it's enjoying the game. It's having fun. It's got a mean streak to it. Their best player has been terrific, and they're getting contributions all the way around. The power play looks really good. These are good signs, obviously, for the Bruins. And from the flip side, the Maple Leafs struggle defending. A lot of odd man rushes against. They lose Matthews in that game. We'll see where it goes. It just looks like a struggle for them right now. So it's one game. We don't want to dive too deep into one game, but the way it played out was an indication of the trajectory that these two teams are on right now.
And it was 2 games because it was the same thing 2 nights earlier. Yeah. And Stolarz has been pulled in two straight games. He got hurt last night. They don't think it's serious, but, you know, he gave up three goals and they pulled him. It was four goals on Saturday, and they pulled him in that game too. They really miss Joseph Woll. Like, that was set up to be a tandem. Stolarz is a really good goalie. He's never carried a workload like that, like he is now. And I think that's, we've seen it over and over where goalies need a year of that workload to get used to it and to be able to carry it. And I think you're seeing some of the weight of that on Stolarz right now.
I mean, Wedgwood's carrying a big one in Colorado too, but they're about, I mean, McKinnon's been terrific. Makar, Natchez, those guys have been awesome. Anyway, listen, Braden Coburn, Sean, you mentioned it. Former defenseman in the NHL, does a lot of work with the Tampa Bay Lightning now on the broadcast side and the analyst side. Joined us, talked Lightning, went around the league with him. Good stuff here from Braden Coburn. Let's listen to it right now. Braden, thanks so much for joining us. So these Tampa Bay Lightning, slow start, and all of a sudden playing much better right now. Is this the real Lightning? Are we seeing it now?
I think so, absolutely. This this team had way too much talent, experience, pedigree to have the start they had. But I think, you know, sometimes with teams especially veteran teams, it can find a little bit of time. And this team is significantly different than they've been in the past. There's a couple new pieces in the lineup. And I think they're just kind of starting to find their way. And I think you can see with a John Cooper type of system, sometimes it takes a little bit of time for players to kind of really kind of grasp what's going on. But the hockey they've been playing the last 10 games has been fantastic.
Cooper, right? Like, his patience at the beginning of the year, you know, he kept on saying, we're not a bad team all of a sudden. Like, this is a team that's been good for years, and it's the same people. We're not bad. Like, his ability to be patient through ups and downs after so many years, I would assume served a huge purpose with this team early on.
Yeah, a lot of it's the presence of John Cooper and the attitude that he cultivates within that team culture. But, you know, there's also, you have Victor Hedman, you have Braden Point, you have Nikita Kucherov, Jake Guentzel. Like, you have a whole laundry list of leaders in that room that, you know, these guys, they were not worried. They knew what kind of talent they had. They were disappointed, obviously, in the results that were happening. But I think it gave them a chance to kind of sharpen a little bit what was going on with them. And some of the problems were just defensively. Possession was a problem. They were playing way too much in their own zone. The shot attempts were way down, and they kind of just had a renewed emphasis on what makes them successful. And that was driven into them, I guess, after that slow start.
You have a unique perspective. It's not often that a former player will go and do what you do now with the same coach being there, right? So how does that help you? You have a unique understanding. You played under John Cooper for several years. You have an understanding of what the systems are all about, but also what the room is about with him and how it happens. So when this team got off to a slow start this year and now they're playing better, did you have a different perspective than, say, if it was a different coach that you played for, but you're still in Tampa just doing what you're doing?
I think it does give me a little bit of a unique perspective. And one of the things I know about John Cooper is, and I'm probably one of the reasons that he's been able to have the tenure he has, is that the way he was when I got here in 2015 is not the same way he is now. He's a coach that is definitely changing, evolving, bringing in new ideas, keeping things fresh with the guys. So the biggest kind of insight I have usually is those leaders in the room, the guys that I know that, you know, are the player-led leadership. And John Cooper does a really good job of enabling them to lead. He's not necessarily, sitting out there with the whip, making sure everyone's falling in line. He really enables those guys to kind of right the ship, get everyone online, hold themselves accountable. And if there's some gaps in the surface of what's going on, he'll make sure he plugs those.
One of those guys is Braden Point, and he's had over 40 goals in each of the last 3 years. He has three this season. Is there a reason to worry here?
You know what? It's Braden Point. When you watch his game, you're still like, you're watching. He's got all those dynamic abilities that have made him great for so long. I think one of the things that is probably a point of contention or a point of maybe frustration a little bit amongst the skill players on Tampa Bay Lightning has been the power play. This is a group that is, they've been dominant in every sense of the word in their power play for as long as really kind of that group has been together. Obviously, with removing Steven Stamkos from the power play, there's been a lot of talk down here about that. But the power play last year was clipping around at almost 26%. This year, they're down to I think they're down to about just under 18% on the year. And when you remove that kind of ability to for those skill players to get some points and really kind of contribute. You know, you were talking about Nikita Kucherov, who I was looking at the stats today. I had to go down to the 60th player on the in the league to find where Nikita Kucherov was in the league leaders. You know, I'm used to seeing him on the first page at some point or at the top, nevertheless. But you know, he's 5 power play points on the year. This is a guy that's had 99 power play points over the last 2 seasons. Obviously, a point of pride for this team that their power play and special teams are really a driving force and a strength of this club. So, again, is it a point of are we worried about Braden Point? Are we worried about the power play? To a certain extent, but I also understand the skill and the world-class ability of these guys to kind of figure out the problem and get the ship back on track. And when they do, it's going to really help this team kind of push themselves over the edge. They've had 10 one-goal games this season. And you think about adding a power play goal here or there, it really kind of puts them in a different perspective as far as whether they're chasing the game or padding to their lead. And I think that part of their game will definitely show up at some point here in the near future.
From that power play, are they showing different looks? Are they, you know, I mean, what are you seeing in terms of the power play? Well, maybe some reasons why it just hasn't quite clicked the way we've seen it.
Yeah, I think they're really searching for answers. Jeff Helpern, who runs the power play and who's done an excellent job here for many years, he's always tinkering. And I think Nikita Kucherov is kind of one of those guys you can categorize as like he's a power play savant. He really is thinking about where he wants to be. And we've seen him be moved around at different points. He's been on the left side, on the right side. Jake Guentzel has moved around. Braden Point, who you know we talked about, you know his goal production. You know he's a smaller guy, but he scores his goals kind of right in that little kind of quiet area in front of the net. He's so good in that bumper position, and he's been moved around, and he's been moved onto his one-time side. And so there's been some movement there. Victor Hedman's been kind of a constant at the top, but we might see that a little differently moving forward here, especially if he's not able to go tonight and get some different look. We might see Darren Radish at the top there. And so that adds a different dynamic when you add a right-handed defenseman for Nikita Kucherov in that setup. But you know, there are definitely some moving pieces, and we'll see who kind of fits in where and what ends up kind of clicking for them.
Braden, we talked about some of the things that have been surprising in Lightning Land, but there's been surprises all over the league so far. We're almost at the quarter point, and you look at the standings, and like you mentioned, you look at some of the stats leaders, you know, across the league. What surprised you the most so far in the first quarter of the season?
I think it's just the you're always expecting kind of the young guys to really kind of blossom early. And so looking at the league and looking at the guys that are really kind of producing right now, I'm not super surprised to see a Bedard up there at Celebrini, Leo Carlson. These guys are there's uber talented players, and early on I think historically you do see these players really kind of take off. And I think that it's been fun to watch because the level of dynamic ability these players have is really fun. And but I think as the season wears along, you'll see kind of maybe a kind of a leveling out of some of the other players. But as far as like being surprised of what I'm seeing, you know, there's not a lot. I still think the good teams that I were kind of predicting at the beginning of the year will be good. It's been really fun watching, you know, a team like we saw come through here a couple weeks ago, the Anaheim Ducks. I think they have some great pieces. It was fun watching them and the Western Conference teams that we don't see a whole lot. So it's been a great start to the season as far as being a fan is concerned.
You know, you look at it. You mentioned the Ducks, the Leo Carlson. You mentioned, you know, Bedard, Blackhawks, Celebrini, Sharks. Those were power teams. You know, for about a you know a decade ago, those were power teams. That I would imagine when you went through that trip to California, it was like a gauntlet, right? With the Kings, the Ducks, and the Sharks. And now you see these guys taking this step, and their teams taking a step. Is it the fact that they've been uber talented this whole time that they've been in the league, but they're taking ownership now? Maybe they feel a little bit more comfortable now to not be deferring to a veteran, that they maybe look at themselves and say, hey, I'm closer to being a veteran, even though I'm 20 years old.
Yeah, I think confidence is a really fickle thing, and something that is really should be guarded and really trying to build it. You know, we don't see the Western Conference teams. And when I was playing, I played only in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. And yes, going into California was a treat, but it was also, you knew you were in line for some rough games. And it's really interesting to see how those teams have started to kind of rebuild the cupboard and stockpile after having such veteran heavy teams for so long. And then in the Eastern Conference, you know, we kind of look at the same thing. For me, I look at the Ottawa Senators, I look at the Buffalo Sabres, I look at the Detroit Red Wings, teams that have been kind of in this rebuild mode for a little while. And you're just waiting to see, you know, you look at the lineup, you see all the talent, the first round picks, the guys that you, with your own eyes, you can watch and watch them play. And you say, like, these guys have something here. It's just a matter of putting it all together. Obviously, the Senators have taken a step last year, I really believe. I think the Red Wings are taking a step this year. The Buffalo Sabres, you know, I think they're stuck a little bit in a funk right now, but the talent is there. And I think it's interesting when you could try to find that element, that secret sauce of what's going to give these guys confidence to play together and ultimately result in winning hockey games. And it's the mystery of the NHL sometimes.
Braden, another mystery, I think, is, you know, as fans, we wake up every day, we go to NHL.com and we look at the standings and we freak out either positively or negatively. Like, our team's in first place, our team's in last place, and they're 2 points, right? But for players, when does that date come when all of a sudden they're paying attention?
Well, I can't speak for everyone. I can only speak for myself, but that date usually came much later. Maybe. I guess it depended if you're winning, you really weren't too concerned about it. If you're losing, you're kind of always peeking over at the board a little bit. But I think really by the time Thanksgiving comes, you start to kind of get an idea of who's going to be kind of in the mix-ish and kind of getting an idea for who's got a team this year. So I think it's an interesting thing. And I think, you know, you have friends and family calling you and being like, oh, what's going on with you guys? Or you guys are crushing it. And sometimes those things play in more than just necessarily like the day-to-day watching the standings, watching with the movement. But there's so many games, and especially this year with an Olympic game, the games being so condensed, the games are just kind of, the points are piling up very quickly. And you can see a team go from, you know, not performing well for 2 weeks to all of a sudden putting together 5-6 wins in a row and really kind of pulling themselves back into contention. So it's kind of one of the beauties of maybe the scheduling this year as a fan, but you know, there's not a lot of time to really kind of let yourself go into a slump, because there's constant movement in this league.
And that's the Boston Bruins, right? They lose a bunch in a row and now all of a sudden, like, they win a bunch in a row. You try to figure out what they are. I did want to ask you from a defenseman perspective though, what have you thought of Matthew Schaefer?
Oh, unbelievable. I watched his game, and the speed and the confidence with the puck, it's just so fun to watch. And I'm just thinking about Matthew Dyershin, just thinking about him coming into that position and being like, holy moly, what did I do to do this? You know, he really picked a flurry of clover there. And because this kid is special. And you can see the joy he plays with and the way his teammates are really kind of protecting him in a lot of senses. But, you know, he's taking a definite role of, you know, of driving offense and driving play and the way he flies around the ice. And the way the thing that I really kind of enjoy watching about is that he's not mistake free and he makes mistakes, but the way he recovers from those mistakes, it reminds me a little bit about Victor Hedman and his ability, his length, his speed, his size. And Hedy is a player that kind of is able to push the boundaries of play sometimes. And there will be mistakes he makes, but because of all those attributes that he has, the intangibles, his recoveries are fantastic. And I see a lot of that in Schaefer.
But did you see that in Hedman at 18? To me, that seems to be the most impressive part about Schaefer, is he doesn't act like he's playing in the NHL.
Well, I think players today, and I think it's a testament to coaching and preparation, or and maybe just even the players themselves and the seriousness that they take their craft. But I just feel personally that players today are so much more prepared to play this NHL game than ever before.
Listen, I wanted to ask you one quick one back to the Lightning. Last year, they were able to go get Yanni Gourde came back and Oliver Bjorkstrand came in. Bjorkstrand got hurt. Gourde got hurt in the playoffs. They're not piling up numbers, these two. But what impact have you seen them make, especially over these last, say, 2 weeks?
It's been the Gorgensen, Gord, and Holmberg line have been really, they're kind of like, I think they've been categorized sometimes as the fourth line. John Cooper says that's not true. They're just the line, you know. But they've been driving play, and they've been driving momentum and possession. And the way those guys have kind of an idea of how each other are playing and their chemistry. Those guys have been really, really good and very important. And I think with Yanni's, the way he plays and approaches the game kind of every day and the energy that he brings, he's kind of just a spark plug on that line. He's been, and they've been kind of one of the real reasons that this team has started to kind of turn the corner. And I think it's a lot to do with their mentality and their defense checking kind of attitude.
Braden, it's been great to have you. I really appreciate it. Try not to be too cold. Well, you're built for this weather, but try and console all your Tampa brethren about the 40-degree weather.
Well, I'm looking out the window right now and I'm watching people walk their dogs, and they got the big puffer jackets and the toques on and gloves, and I'm chuckling because I'm going to golf here at noon, so I'm like just kind of excited to see what's going to be out there. We have a LPGA event to the Annika at our course here in Bel Air, Tampa. So it's going to be a fun week.
This is shorts and t-shirt weather for you. Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
I got to keep my Saskatchewan card. I got it.
Sean, really good stuff there from Braden Coburn. First time guest, I think, by the way. First time, long time, we'll call him, for Braden Coburn.
You know, as we were getting ready to talk to him, I was like, man, the Tampa Bay Lightning, their set of analysts and front office guys is crazy. Like Coburn, Maroon, Hall, Espo, Andrechuk, they're ready to go.
They are truculent.
They roll into town heavy.
Yeah, they do. They roll into town big and heavy. No question about it. Really good stuff there from Coburn. So, Sean, this week in my mailbag, I got a question. It was more of a statement than a question, but it was like, who knew that the secret to unleash Connor Bedard would be Tyler Bertuzzi? And if you look at the Blackhawks of late, Bertuzzi has just been terrific. But if you really dive into it, Sean, I mean, obviously Bedard's been great too. If you dive into it, you got a guy in Bedard, and I wrote about this in the mailbag. It's on NHL.com right now. Bedard has a terrific shot. He's a great skilled player, playmaker, but he's got a terrific shot. And he's a guy you want to get in a shooting position. But when you have a guy with a terrific shot, you need a net front presence. And Tyler Bertuzzi has been terrific around the net for the Chicago Blackhawks, and this tandem has worked. You look at some of the goals that they've scored, it's with Bertuzzi around the net. And not only that, he can skate with him. You get a two-on-one, Bertuzzi's skating with Bedard. There's no question about it. He's there up the ice with them. They can create that way. It's been a huge factor in the Blackhawks' success in the early part of this season.
Yeah, and I think they've unlocked each other, right? I think, you know, there's certain things that Tyler does that's helped Connor, right? You talked about net foot presence, but he's also a physical guy. I think he opens up the ice for Connor a little bit, and you know, gives him a little more space, and you know, and then there's just the confidence of knowing, even if I don't score on a shot, there's an opportunity for the puck to go in. Like the NHL isn't a shoot first league anymore. Right. And I think when you look at the goalies and the fact that this is the lowest save percentage in a long, long time, in part it's because nobody comes down and just shoots, except for the Carolina Hurricanes. That's their whole MO, is just shoot the puck as often as possible and hope something good happens. And normally it does for them. But for everybody else in the league, it's much more clinical now. There's no blind shots. There's no hope and a prayer. But you're seeing a little more of that from Connor Bedard, because he wants to generate rebounds because he knows he's going to have somebody in front of the net to clean it up. But as good as they've been, you know, Frankie Nazar has been out for a couple of days. My concern there is there's some depth issues. Like, where's the goal scoring going to come from when those guys are marked out of a game?
Well, yeah, no question. There's depth issues. They're taking the step that the Anaheim Ducks took last year, right? I mean, that's essentially what's happening in Chicago. Younger guys are coming up and popping. They're finding some chemistry. Not quite there yet. I think at the end of the day, they're not quite there yet because, like you said, the depth issues that they have. But Bedard is really taking ownership now. He's playing a real strong game in his third season. And a big thing is with Bertuzzi. Watch the goal that it was Bedard scored against Detroit. It was a power play goal. I'm sorry, Bertuzzi scored it against Detroit. It's a power play goal. They send it down to Bertuzzi down at the right post. And Andrew Kopp is sort of like on a string there because you have to respect Bedard's shot. Bedard was in the right circle. He gives it to Bertuzzi down at the right post. Kopp's giving room to Bertuzzi down there because he's got to come out and respect Bedard's shot on a pass back, and it allows Bertuzzi to turn around, spin to the front of the net, face up against John Gibson and make a move and put the puck in the net. And it's because Bedard's shot is so good that they have to respect it. Yes, it's a power play goal. I understand that. So there's a 5-on-4 situation, but there's space for Bertuzzi, and Bertuzzi's ability around the net, like you said, creates space for Bedard if he wanted to pass it back there. You got the defender on a string there, or the forward on a string. It's been good. But yes, listen, I think they're taking this step, and I think the San Jose Sharks are doing it too, taking that step that the Ducks took last year. It's not an easy process to go from zero. You can't go from zero to the playoffs in this league. It's a really hard thing to do.
You know what helps them, though? Spencer Knight.
Yeah.
He's been fantastic. I would argue that he may be playing his way into the Olympic conversation.
Very well could be. Nothing set there, right? I mean, he absolutely very well could be for the U.S. But here's the other question, and this has been a part of a debate now, and Nick Kotsenika, our colleague, was, you know, in Toronto for the general managers meetings and, you know, around Hall of Fame weekend. And on Monday, you had the Canada management team led by Doug Armstrong. They had a long session. The U.S. management team led by Bill Guerin had a shorter session, but it was actually in the same hotel on the same floor that they were both on, which was interesting. But there's a debate now among the Canadian contingent of Bedard and or Celebrini. Yes to both. Neither go. One or the other go. I mean, Sean, these two guys right now are two of the best Canadian forwards in the league. Scoring-wise, the way they're playing, the energy that they're bringing. Why can't both of them go?
Both of them could go, but who do you take out, right? Like, I think that becomes the question, right? What's their resume? And it's kind of, you know, how do you figure it out because you don't give them a chance, right? Can they play at that level? Well, I don't know. So I'm not going to put them at that level. But at some point, you have to be like, well, I have to believe, right? And Canada faced the same issue with Crosby, and they didn't, yeah. Right? Crosby went in 2010 and was the star of the show, scored the golden goal. He didn't go the previous Olympics because Canada didn't feel that he was ready, and they also felt like they had 13 forwards, established forwards, who were better than a guess, right? Then hoping what they saw would translate onto the international ice. But you look at the Four Nations roster, right? And who do you take off? And you know, I didn't get the chance to ask Braden this, Braden Coburn, when we were talking, right? We talked about point and he only has 3 goals. Like, at what point does the past surrender to the future, to the present, right? Canada knows who point is and what he can do. He's on a 15-goal pace. He had 3 goals.
He's already on, though. He's on the team.
Yeah, but in general, like, as guys go through this, because you're going to look at it all across the league, right? Like, guys are struggling, and then they're like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? You know, my Olympic participation is hanging in the balance. Or you're going to see a guy like Marchand, right? I need to make this team, so I'm just going to score every day. How can they keep me off if I score every day, right? But he played on the Four Nations, so they know what he's like in that setting. I think the biggest detriment to those two players is nobody knows what they're like in a huge game among men.
Understood. I get that. You remember, you can take one more forward, right? So that's where I think the debate is. If you stick with the balance of the roster for Canada, you're adding an extra forward. So do you want to take – you're thinking, well, we'll take one of these two guys. Bo Horvat's playing his way onto that team. He's got 12 goals in 16 games right now. So he's in the conversation too. So let's not forget about that. I think you can take both. I honestly do. I think you can take both. I think you look at the – it depends on what lineup you want to put out there. What do your forward lines look like, and what are the roles of each of those lines? Can Bedard and or Celebrini play if as effectively as they play if they're getting 10 to 12 to 14 minutes a night and they're not on the power play, right? That's where the debate comes in. My argument would be, why not put them on the power play, right? Like, that's where they excel. So why wouldn't you put them on the power play? There are other guys there that are excel on the power play as well. But you look at the Canadian roster from the Four Nations, you had Konechny, you had Marchand, and you had Jarvis. Very similar players, right? Could you take one of those guys off to give it to Celebrini and Bedard, thinking one of, you know, Celebrini, let's say Celebrini takes the extra spot that's available because you have 14 forwards go to the Olympics, 13 went to the Four Nations. So Celebrini takes that spot, and then Bedard takes one of Marchand, Jarvis, Konechny, and you have them there, and they're still such impactful players, and then they're also getting experience at that level as well.
Yeah, you certainly can. I think the difficulty is, in one of the celebrations of the Four Nations was it gave everyone an opportunity to see what they had, right? And to figure out what they have and how it works together. Because you're gonna walk into Milan and you're gonna play.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have two practices maybe. And look, some of the qualification round is practice. Right? It doesn't really matter where you finish. It doesn't matter, you know, how you get there. And you can tinker, and there's going to be teams that you play that you can tinker against because they're not of the same quality. That's just the reality of the Olympics. But part of the Four Nations was that you knew what you had, right? And Canada knows what they have in their forwards. And unless somebody's playing really bad, I think it would be hard to walk away from that. But I think the even more interesting question, Dan, is what about on defense? Because you're allowed to dress seven defensemen. Do you take Schaefer and spot him, right? On the power play, chasing a lead, whatever it might be. You know, his speed, we talked about it with Braden Coburn, his speed is infectious and dangerous. And just think about him with some of the speedsters that are amongst the Canadian forwards. The pace that they could play at would decimate some teams.
I mean, listen, he certainly, and Doug Armstrong addressed it, said, I didn't think you'd be asking me about him a month ago. But now he's played his way into that conversation. There's no question about it. But if you're not, like, I guess I see your point, Sean, but like, if we're debating Celebrini or Bedard, how are you then taking Schaefer over some of the other guys that, you know, went for Canada last year? Like, you know, Morrissey didn't play in the last game against the U.S. You had Thomas Harley in there. You had Devon Taves. You had Travis Sanheim, who's a big defenseman, and you need that. You had McCarr, Pareko, another big defenseman, and Doughty was in there too. And Doughty is just a guy with a ton of experience. And does Schaefer take the role of a Doughty? I mean, does he take that spot? Do you look at that? I mean, that I'm here to have that, you know, argument, and I'm here to listen to that. I can understand that.
All I know is there's a lot of Canadian defensemen looking over their shoulder right now.
Yes. Yeah, this kid's been really good. I mean, he's electrifyingly good. Like, he reminds me now when he gets the puck and he's moving around, it reminds me of, like, when you're watching Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes. Like, that's what I feel like I'm watching. You know, like, something is going to happen. Something, like, he's going to make something dangerous happen. every single time he's on the ice. That's how I feel when I'm watching Matthew Schaefer now.
The only problem for him is he is going to make something dangerous happen on the ice. You just don't know for who.
But he's not that, you know, it's not like that often with him. I think he's really defensively conscious as well. It's a great debate. There's a lot of stuff going on around the Olympics. The rosters are due in, I believe, December 31st, right?
Yep.
December 31st is when the rosters are due in. And, you know, we know that they can change from there until we get to Milan because of injury and whatnot. But those rosters are due in December 31st. Last thing, Sean, before we get out of here. So it was a great weekend, Hall of Fame weekend in Toronto. Great speeches by Joe Thornton. Great speech by Duncan Keith. Loved them. Next year, Patrice Bergeron is a lock. I wanted to bring up a name to you, and this is the one that gets everybody talking. Is Phil Kessel a Hall of Famer?
Wow. One of the more polarizing.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring it up.
People, right? I don't think hockey's as bad as baseball when it comes to the way voting happens or the way players are picked, A, because it's not a vote per se. You know, it's not a large group like it is in baseball saying this guy's a Hall of Famer, that guy's a Hall of Famer. And there's been grudges that have kept players out of the Baseball Hall of Fame for a long time. But Phil hasn't provided the warm and fuzzies for a lot of people. And it's just because of his personality, right? Like, it's who he is. Like, it's not because he's a bad guy. It's not any of that. It's just that he's not like a Patrice Bergeron, right? Who everybody just thinks is the greatest thing since sliced bread, in part because he is. And I want to let all the listeners in on a little secret. We did those testimonials, and he did the one for Zdeno Chara, and sometimes they get a little help from the writer who's doing the actual story. Patrice wrote his own. That guy, he's unbelievable. He could do anything. He could take my job tomorrow.
Yeah. He could. He maybe could. Better watch out. I listen, Phil Kessel, I brought it up. It's a fun way to end the podcast this week. I don't think he will be a first year eligible candidate for the Hall of Fame next year. I don't think he gets in first year. It's a debate. He didn't score 500 goals. He didn't get 1,000 points. He did win the Stanley Cup 3 times. He doesn't really have much of an international successful resume. He did win a silver with the U.S. in the 2010 Olympics. He was the best forward. He was named the best forward at the 2014 Sochi Olympics. He had 8 points in 6 games there. They didn't win anything. They didn't get a medal there. It's an interesting debate for Phil Kessel, but some of the numbers I don't think back up his Hall of Fame candidacy, at least right now.
I agree. And before we go, I just want to visit one other thing, because the Hall of Fame is one of my favorite events, and what we do with the testimonials and the features, you know, is fantastic. If you haven't read them, even though the Hall of Fame's over, you should go back and read them. Another one of my favorite events is going on right now. We can't spend a lot of time on it, but the Global Series is happening in Stockholm. The Penguins and the Predators are over in Stockholm, and they'll play games on Friday and Sunday. They're over there now practicing, enjoying the city, hopefully bonding a little bit for two different reasons. Pittsburgh wants to keep up the fast start that they've had, and Nashville is just looking for answers. You know, they leave. You saw it. They leave for Sweden after a 6-2 loss to the Rangers at Madison Square Garden, which is even worse than the scoreline suggests, because the Rangers can't score at Madison Square Garden, and they put up a 6 spot, and that game was never, ever competitive. It had to be a long flight to Stockholm overnight to get there. But now they're there, and these events can lead to a lot of bonding, and there's some answers that the Predators have to find. I don't know if they can find them as they're currently constructed, but this is going to give them an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, by the way, just want to say, and it was an easy goal to forget, it was 6-3 at the Garden. Matthew Wood got the hat trick. Don't take his hat trick, his first NHL hat trick away, Sean. He got it in a meaningless goal, but he got it. The Predators have a lot of issues. They don't have any center depth. Ryan O'Reilly is their number one center, and I think Ryan O'Reilly's had a really good career. Ryan O'Reilly doesn't think he's had a really good career. He said, "I've had one good year."
he doesn't think he's a number one center either. Like, yeah. Good for you in being honest, but maybe keep it to yourself.
Yeah, I don't think he's a number one center either, and that's an issue for them. The Steven Stamkos issue, we talked about it on the podcast last week. That's a concern. There's nobody to get him the puck. There's a lot of issues there. So they can go over to Stockholm, and even if they win two games, I don't see them having the sustainability that other teams that have gone over to Stockholm or, you know, to the Global Series or formerly the NHL Premier Games and bonded and gotten together and came out of it strong like the Lightning did, you know, in 2019. They put Stockholm on their championship rings because that trip meant so much to them, right? I don't see it with Nashville, Sean. I just don't. I mean, it's they have a lot of wayward pieces, if you will.
Yeah, and it was the same for the Penguins. That, you know, Crosby's over there now, and it's at the end of his career. It was at the beginning of his career that him and Malkin went over as young players, and Letang, and that fueled the bonds that they made to win their championships. And, you know, I'm sure there's some very pleasant memories for Sidney and Malkin and Letang as they go over. Tom Gallitti, our colleague, wrote a great story about, you know, how they've been together for 20 years, and this is kind of like a bookend event for them. So those games are great. They're on early, so it's nice. You kind of get a different time slot to watch your hockey in on Friday and Sunday. But it's going to be fantastic, and Tom and Emily are covering it from front to back, so check it out on NHL.com.
Yep, absolutely. Friday is 2 p.m. Eastern, and Sunday is 9 a.m. Eastern. Both are on the NHL Network. So anyway, they're over there. We'll see how it goes. We'll talk about it a little bit next week. Lots going on around the league. Sean, this was fun. We thank Braden Coburn. By the way, do you think Nashville can figure it out?
No, I don't. I want them to. They're one of my favorite teams to watch, and I want Saros to have a good year, but I don't see it. And now he has to start worrying about is he the starter for Finland, because he's not playing like the starter.
Yeah, those Olympic discussions are heating up as well. So lots going on. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the hockey.